Yo, is China selling Bitcoin on the open market and dumping the price? Well, we have some new data from Reuters that reveals that local Chinese governments have been recently selling thousands of Bitcoin while America looks poised to buy more. Could China's secret selling help explain why the price of Bitcoin hasn't mooned in the first 90 days of the Trump administration, despite the administration being pro-Bitcoin? I've seen three wild bull markets in my 9 years in Bitcoin, and this perhaps could be the second time that China has attempted to cancel a bull run. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the 2021 bull run was really interesting. Because if you take a look at the hash rate and you take a look at the price of Bitcoin, it seems like China banned Bitcoin mining in the middle of the last bull run. And you can make an argument. Some people have been making an argument that that was the reason as to why we didn't reach 100K in 2021. So before we start the show, I do want to bring up our special guest for today. We have Jameson Lopp, CTO and co-founder of Casa, and of course, my legendary co-host who's always optimistic, Optimus Fields. So let's go through some of the data. What is it that I'm talking about? So this is the Bitcoin price and the hash rate. You see, the hash rate absolutely fell off a cliff. It dropped by 50%, and that was the first China mining ban. Now, that was a blessing in disguise after the fact, because after that mining ban, the hash rate decentralized in the process. Some of it went to Texas. A lot of it went to Texas. A lot of it went around the world. So it was a blessing in disguise. And of course, the hash rate recovered. But a lot of people were speculating essentially that China did this on purpose to essentially, you know, stop the last bull run. And as you can see, the price and the hash rate, you can make an argument that there's a correlation there, right? So what am I talking about in today's news? Check out this recent Reuters article that dropped yesterday. Then the headline for the audio listeners is China debates how to handle criminal crypto cache. It goes on to say China's growing pile of cryptocurrency seized from illegal transactions is prompting local governments to find ways to dispose of the hoard and spurring calls from courts and the financial industry for better regulation. Lawyers said that the lack of rules around how authorities should handle seized Bitcoin and other tokens whose trading is banned on the mainland has spawned inconsistent and opaque approaches that some fear could embolden lawbreakers and foster corruption. And it goes on to say, together with senior judges and police, attorneys are debating changes to rules that said will soon change the way confiscated virtual currencies are treated. That could be a game changer for China's crypto industry and comes at a time of heightened Sino-US tensions in Donald Trump's second presidency, coinciding with Trump's plans to deregulate cryptocurrencies and build a Bitcoin reserve. Crypto trading is banned in China, and digital tokens are not recognized as legal tender or assets there. But local governments have been using private companies to sell seized digital coins in exchange for cash to replenish public coffers, strained by slowing economy, according to transactions and court documents seen by Reuters. Such disposals are a, quote, makeshift solution that, strictly speaking, is not fully in line with China's current ban on crypto trading. Better supervision is pressing as the number of cases and amounts of money balloons, said Chen, who attended a seminar in January to discuss the issue with various officials. It goes on to say, a Shenzhen-based lawyer who has also attended the seminar said China's ban on crypto trading conflicts with local authorities' need to liquidate seized digital assets. A senior partner at Beijing law firm thinks China's central bank is better positioned to handle the cryptocurrencies and should either sell them overseas or build a crypto reserve from seized tokens like Trump plans to do. So that's, again, the lots of signal in this article. Signal number one, even with the, you know, no one is better than their incentives. Don't pay attention to what they say. Pay attention to what they do. Despite, you know, selling and trading of Bitcoin being illegal in China, local governments themselves are selling Bitcoin to kind of, you know, I'm assuming to fund, let's put it nicely, to fund, you know, local government. And the other part here, which I find really interesting as well, is there's a hint in that, right? Which is perhaps, you know, the central bank of China follows in the footsteps of the Trump administration and establishes a Bitcoin reserve as well. It goes on to say, discussions have heated up this year alongside a surge in criminal cases in China involving cryptocurrencies ranging from internet fraud to money laundering and illegal gambling. The number of busts, crypto crimes have coincided with a jump in local governments' penalty and confiscatory incomes, which hit a record of 378 billion yuan in 2023, a 65% rise in 5 years, according to official budget data. A lawyer who advises local governments on crypto-related issues said seized cryptocurrencies have become a major contributor to local finances in some cities. So, I mean, you can kind of see the moral hazard there, right? If a big portion of a local government's revenue comes from seizing cryptocurrencies, you have to take that local government's word that they really are seizing cryptocurrencies because they're involved in crime and not because they have a monopoly on violence and they're just seizing cryptocurrencies to seize cryptocurrencies. So there's a ton of signal in this article. And it's quite interesting. So, I mean, you could make the case that, you know, it's a lot of sell pressure. If you take a look at the amount of Bitcoin that's held by these local Chinese governments, it amounts to about 15,000 Bitcoin. And now we know in April, right, that they've been apparently selling thousands of these Bitcoin for the last couple of months. A lot of people were expecting the price of Bitcoin to moon after a pro-Bitcoin administration with Trump going in, but it seems like it hasn't done that at all. And another thing too, that also there's some similarities between what is happening over there and what's happening here in the US is in the US, we saw this article was published in February 21st, US Marshal Services can't say how much crypto it holds, complicating Bitcoin reserve plan. Now, part of the strategic Bitcoin reserve executive order that Donald Trump signed, he basically told all the federal agencies that they needed to report by April 5th how much Bitcoin the U.S. federal government holds. We still haven't heard any.
Sorry about that, guys. I'm in Puerto Rico. The light just went out. Do it with my local microphone. There we go. It's back. So we still don't know how much. This is crazy. We still don't know how much Bitcoin the U.S. government holds, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of similarities there. It also kind of creates the moral hazard because it's like, you know, like you are trusting these officials to, you know, essentially play by the rules. You are trusting them to, you know, not skim a little bit off the top. And it seems like, you know, according to that article from Reuters, it seems like officials in China, at least like on the, you know, top government level, are fearing just that. So anyways, lots of similarities. This could have been the cause of the downward sell pressure. I want to get Lop's thoughts on this. First of all, Lop, I want to get your thoughts on just a government having a strategic reserve in general. It seems like China might fall in the footsteps of the United States. Seems like Europe might follow in the footsteps of the United States. Do you think that's a good idea for Bitcoin at all? Lop, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Bitcoin itself doesn't really care. And the incentives are set up such that, you know, everyone and every entity, I think, has an incentive to look into using this as a long-term store of value. But you know, this is where it can get kind of funny to see people talk about governments as if they're monolithic entities. You know, they tend to be quite large, and in some cases we see, hypocritical or paradoxical activities that are coming out because one portion of the government decrees one thing, and then another portion says, "Wait a minute, that doesn't really work for us." And I would say that I've felt for a while that it makes more sense for like local and regional governments to be more incentivized to have a Bitcoin strategy because the national level governments are generally going to be more concerned with their own fiat printing. So, you know, in the United States, I feel like it makes more sense for individual states to build up their own reserves and use that as a part of their treasury management strategy. But it's more difficult to kind of square the circle of a nation state that has one of the, you know, top 10 fiat currencies in the world to also be trying to do a Bitcoin treasury strategy, because those two things could potentially be in conflict with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Opti, what are your take? What's your take on what Lop was saying?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. But I think it is the most interesting part about this. I think if you put China and the America in like a historical context and like a monetary war, it's pretty interesting. Like, if this is true, or rather, if China is essentially going to be selling all of their Bitcoin at this moment, obviously they're discussing whether they should hodl their Bitcoin, whether they should sell the seized Bitcoin. Again, we don't know what's going on the federal level in the U.S. We still haven't got a Bitcoin audit from the United States. So they claim to own 200,000 Bitcoin. Senator Lummis has been saying that maybe the Biden administration has been selling some of that Bitcoin. We don't know where the sell pressure is coming from. Now we are kind of getting these reports from Reuters. Also, we kind of have to trust Reuters on this. They're like, yeah, we saw these transactions. You know, we don't know what's coming from China. But the point remains the same. We really don't know how much Bitcoin China or the U.S. holds at this point. So we can, I guess, at this point argue that there's probably less Bitcoin at the nation state level. But again, putting this into historical context, it's very interesting to see China make this move. If they double down on this move and sell all the Bitcoin that they own, you know, historically, China stayed on the silver standard while the U.S. and everyone else moved to a gold standard. If they make this same mistake with Bitcoin and they go, like, now, what, hundreds of years later to the gold standard while the U.S. goes to a Bitcoin standard, it's going to be one of the biggest mistakes in monetary history, in my opinion. So it's very interesting to see that they are actually considering this. And again, love them or hate them, the Trump effect is in effect. It is happening. Ever since Trump came out and said they're going to be more pro-Bitcoin, everyone around the world has to adjust their Bitcoin stance. And we're seeing this play out. You know, this announcement that we got a couple weeks ago about them essentially hodling all the Bitcoin, that all the seized Bitcoin they get, they're not going to sell anymore, and it's going to be their strategic Bitcoin reserve. I think the same incentives and concerns that you said about China are, you know, very real concerns and valid concerns in the U.S. But the point remains the same. If China sells all their Bitcoin and the U.S. starts hodling all their Bitcoin, we really are going to see a fork in the road. And obviously, I'm not sure if I fully agree with Nico's theory that China killed the last bull run. Yes, there's some correlations there.
I mean, hold on. Lop, what do you think? Do you think it's a coincidence that the hash rate and the Bitcoin price dropped the way to? I'm going to pull this up because you guys might call me crazy, but I mean, I'm definitely not seeing something. Like, it's very apparent. Let me pull this up.
I mean, it was a massive economic disruption. Let's see, that was in 2021. I mean, I would also question, like, when was all of the fallout from the credit bubble, you know, lending collapse happening? It might have been around the same time.
Yeah, but it was pretty similar.
But I mean, look, I think nation states should sell all their Bitcoin. and the main reason for that is that I think it's too early. Like, I would prefer to have more time for Bitcoin to be distributed further amongst individuals before nation states and big institutions come in and hoover it all up, because there is some systemic risk here. Just think about it. You know, when a new entity, especially one with a lot of money, comes in and decides to take a significant stake in this network from a financial perspective, they're going to start caring about it more. And that's one of the things that I miss is I much preferred the days of Bitcoin when nation states generally didn't care about it other than, you know, from a law enforcement perspective. You know, if you think about one of the scariest phrases in the English language is I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And that's kind of one of the things that I'm afraid of if the major nation states get too interested in Bitcoin, is what they then might try to do from a sort of governance perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and as the meme goes, this is the real separation of money and state, is when governments start dumping their Bitcoin. So I back Lop.
So let me ask you something else, Lop. So, you know, you've been in the industry for quite a while. Does it surprise you that we're here, right? Because, you know, I'm
I'm class of 2016. It was the Wild West back then. You know, you're from a much earlier class. Does it surprise you that, you know, Bitcoin has essentially been given the rubber stamp of approval by the most powerful government on the face of the planet, the most powerful asset manager on the face of the planet? All of a sudden, you know, they're pro Bitcoin. I remember in the early days, that was not the case at all, right? There was regulatory uncertainty. I remember when Apple just said no Bitcoin wallets on the app, right? Like it was much more, it was like the Wild West back then. And I can't even imagine, you know, the 2014, 2015 or the 2013 era, what that must have been like. So what has been your experience seeing all of this unfold the way it has?
Yeah, I mean, the game theory and the viral network effect has generally played out as expected, though it's been a lot faster than I ever thought. And, you know, the way that these cycles of adoption happen is, you know, you have a new cohort come in, usually as a result of a new narrative, and they get interested in it and they start looking at it from a new perspective and usually come up with new narratives themselves, and also pull in more popular, more reputable, more wealthy entities. And that sort of is how you pull yourselves up by your bootstraps from a network virality effect. And so to kind of sum up, the thing that I was more surprised about and underestimated is I underestimated how quickly it would go from being anarchists to software engineers to tech entrepreneurs to then very quickly to the like billionaires and tech giants and then nation state level. Is that last adoption cycle I thought was going to take a lot longer to get to the nation state level where people actually take it seriously because the, you know, billionaire asset managers have taken it seriously. And that goes back, you know, each cycle before and before as we bootstrap this network and the reputation.
Absolutely. And Lop, like, where are we in the, you're talking about the adoption cycle. Where are we in the adoption cycle? Because I talk to a lot of people. I guess that's my job as a podcaster, right? And they always say, Nico, you know, we're still early. From someone who has been in Bitcoin since the early days, my response to, you know, and a lot of them are my friends, and, you know, this is the whole point about having discussions, right? My response is like, dude, the U.S. government has the intention to buy Bitcoin. There's no way we are still early. Like, that doesn't make any sense. What's your take, Lop?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why it's confusing. We're early in the sense that we're still a long ways away from what I would consider deep adoption, deep widespread adoption. The surprising thing, like I was just talking about, is how quickly it's kind of did a speed run from being plebs to billionaires to nation states. But even across all of those cohorts, the actual level of adoption amongst all of those peers in any specific subgroup is still quite small. It's just happened to kind of jump from group to group all the way up to the nation state level. But, you know, even at the nation state level, there's only a handful of nation states that are dealing with it seriously. I think a lot of them, like China, are still just dealing with it as, oh, this is just some other asset that we accidentally require as a result of law enforcement actions, and now we need to figure out how to get rid of it. It's only because of what's been happening in the United States that I think other nation states will start to more seriously consider looking at this as a long-term strategy. But, you know, we're still early from that perspective. And we're definitely still early from a mainstream adoption perspective. Like, I look at a ton of different statistics, both from the network adoption level and from general like search engine queries and other metrics that could kind of judge retail interest. And from everything I've seen, we have yet to really get back to the level of retail FOMO that we saw in the like 2017, 2018 era. A lot of the metrics that I follow are still quite muted. And I think that that really is a result of the fact that a lot of the inflows to Bitcoin are really coming from a small number of hands. This, the institutions are here. It's still a small number of institutions. But I feel like the vast majority of retail people are still really turned off to the entire ecosystem. Probably a lot of them that were interested got burned in previous cycles and have basically said, you know, I'm not going to deal with this for the foreseeable future.
100%. And by the way, I echo what you said was spot on. This is a chart, by the way, guys, of Google Trends. And this is 2017. So even with the 2021 bull market, and the I don't even know if you would call this a bull market, whatever we are in right now, you know, what Lop has said is 100% spot on. We haven't seen that retail interest. Now, my question to you, Lop, is it because of the unit bias, right? Because I remember in 2017, we started the year, I believe it was like at 1,000 or a little bit slightly less than 1,000. And if you're, you know, it was still expensive, right? $1,000 is not cheap for, you know, the everyday person, but at least there was a hope of being able to acquire one full Bitcoin, right? Now that we're sitting at $84,937, do you think there's unit bias that goes into it? Or do you still believe that we're going to still see another mania phase in the future?
I mean, that's one factor, but I think that unit bias is only going to keep the most naive and ignorant people out. And so from that perspective, I actually like it. You know, there have been proposals that we should, you know, rename the Satoshi to Bitcoin so that we can get rid of unit bias. But what is that really going to do? I mean, I think that that would result in more ignorant people buying in because they're like, oh, it's cheap and I can afford it. But you know, you look at other assets, and you know, people don't say, you know, I'm not going to buy gold because it's $3,000. I think they're quite clear on the fact that it's subdivisible, however you want to acquire it. And so, I see unit bias as just a way of keeping ignorant people out. You know, if you think you have to buy a whole Bitcoin, you definitely shouldn't buy any Bitcoin because you don't know enough about it to be a responsible Bitcoin owner.
Absolutely. And then final question before we move on to next segment, Lop. What's going on with this bull market? A lot of people were expecting, if you compare the cycles, right, you know, a lot of people were expecting Bitcoin to be a lot higher right now. You know, as we all know, if you've been in Bitcoin for a while, expectations are, Bitcoin has a way of just destroying any expectation you might have. It takes the route of maximum pain. But what is your take as someone who's been in the industry for a long time? What is your, you know, how are you feeling right now with this current cycle, where we are in the movie, Lop?
It's weird. You know, I've been pretty surprised, for example, that Saylor has been able to continue hoovering up so much Bitcoin under $100,000. And I think a lot of us have had this question of like, who is selling all their coins to Saylor? And, you know, maybe it is nation states. Maybe it is Bitcoin billionaires who have to fund their space launches. It's hard to say, you know, unless these people are coming out and explicitly saying, you know, I'm selling a bunch of Bitcoin. Then the only folks who really know are the operators of like the exchanges and the OTC desks.
And who is selling all this Bitcoin? Lot? Is it just OGs that are just they're just like, you know what? I've held from $100. It's at $100,000. I'm gonna go buy a house. I'm gonna go buy a plane. I'm gonna retire. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is some of that, but in general, in a lot of the chat rooms and stuff that I'm in, it's just a lot of confusion. Most people, of course, who have been in the space for a long time are kind of stupefied that people would be selling their Bitcoin for under $100,000. But that's the way it goes, and you can only sell once, right? So you know, eventually, we do expect that the available supply that's for sale is going to get exhausted. It's just it's been surprising that it's gone on for so long, but I think that it's pretty clear that some of the big boys are going to keep buying, and we're going to see some new institutions coming into the space just as a result of this latest cohort that is starting to take Bitcoin more seriously.
Absolutely. And then Lop, like my question for you is I keep getting more questions. My question for you is like, so you're surprised too, right? Because we're surprised as well. Kind of anyone doesn't know. Okay. My question is it possible now that Wall Street has essentially become involved, now that governments have become involved, does rehypothecation at all concern you? Like, could there be a risk of paper Bitcoin? And that potentially could be the reason as to why we haven't seen this upward, you know, buy pressure. Because, yeah, look, Saylor's been buying that Bitcoin. It's on paper, and Coinbase holds it, right? And he has that Bitcoin. But if we don't have the on-chain data, as we have with El Salvador, at least El Salvador made their reserve public, we know at least, you know, that reserve is going up or it's going down. We kind of have to take their word for it. Or is that a naive way of looking at it, Lop?
Yeah, I wrote an article a couple of years ago when all of this ETF stuff started popping off. And I basically said, you know, this is a systemic risk from a few different perspectives. One of them, I would say, which worries me more than how rehypothecation could result in price suppression, is I'm worried about, you know, long-term governance. And I'm worried that if too much Bitcoin flows into too few hands, you know, we already have read these ETF prospectuses that basically give the power of deciding what the real Bitcoin is in a fork scenario to these handful of ETF providers. So, you know, that could put a wrinkle in things if we have some sort of proposal on the table that, you know, perhaps a lot of the Bitcoin ecosystem wants, but for some reason the custodians or perhaps their regulators or, you know, the governments that essentially have control over them say, no, we want you to actually, you know, economically vote against that. The rehypothecation thing is tricky. You know, for example, a lot of the futures markets are actually cash settled rather than settled with spot. So you could argue that a lot of that is kind of fake in the sense that these people aren't trading real Bitcoin. A lot of those futures markets have quite a bit of volume. And really, this is another reason why self-custody is important, is, you know, the only way to truly know that the Bitcoin that you think you own belongs to you is to actually take control of it. And so I think if we had more people that were taking self-custody, that would kind of force the true price to be closer to what it is, or at least to reduce the risk that the price is being manipulated because the quote unquote available supply that is being traded on TradFi platforms is not actually correct.
Yes, 100%. I can't echo that enough. And one of the things that I've noticed this cycle, Lop, is just, and again, I'm not going to name any names, but like this kind of normalization of not owning Bitcoin, but owning like the ETF or owning kind of like a leverage exposure in the stock market of Bitcoin, and kind of the normalization of trying to equate the two. It's like, oh, you know, I have the ETF, but it's like, no, that's not real Bitcoin. That's not real Bitcoin in spot. So, I mean, in self-custody. So yes, I completely agree. It's never been as important as it is today to learn how to take self-custody. And that gets me excited because during the culture segment, we're going to be talking about Casa. Casa makes taking self-custody incredibly easy without giving up custody. And it makes it easier. It makes it convenient. The UI, the UX is absolutely incredible. And of course, we have one of the co-founders with us today, Jameson Lop, to talk about all things Casa, which we're going to do during the culture segment. But before we get into that, I do want to give a very special shout out to Simply Bitcoin's lead sponsor. Of course, I'm talking about the best place to build your automatic self-custody Bitcoin stack, BitcoinWell.com. BitcoinWell.com is a publicly traded company coming out of Canada that recently expanded to all 50 US states. They're a self-custody by default on-ramp. So what does that mean? That means that when you buy Bitcoin on Bitcoin Well, As soon as the funds clear, it goes straight to your self-custody Bitcoin wallet address. They don't even give you the ability to leave your Bitcoin on the exchange, which of course perfectly aligns with the Simply Bitcoin ethos, because self-custody is the revolution. If you're a higher net worth individual and you're looking to buy $50,000 worth of Bitcoin or more, and you want a white glove service, you want a dedicated human account representative that is assigned to your account, and they'll handhold you through the process of buying or selling Bitcoin, check out Bitcoin Well OTC. To get started, go to bitcoinwell.com/OTC. And if you sign up to Bitcoin Well, you earn Bitcoin Well points, but only if you go to bitcoinwell.com/simply. So go to bitcoinwell.com/simply to sign up, and you could use those points towards the Bitcoin Wishing Well contest. Every time you throw a coin into the Wishing Well, you have an opportunity to win up to 1 million Satoshis. Whoa, the prize today for the first person to scan it with a QR code, 21,000 sats just by signing up to bitcoinwell.com/simply. If you do it today, you get 3 tosses into the Wishing Well every single time you win, and every single time you have an opportunity to win up to 1 million Satoshis. What are you waiting for? Go to bitcoinwell.com/simply today. All right, everybody, let's hit the numbers. We have tons to talk about. We got Lop joining us on the show. Smash that like button. We'll be right back.
I want to tell you guys about our sponsor, Stampseed. Is your Bitcoin in cold storage really secure? Are your seed words really secure? Stampseed's do-it-yourself kit has everything you'll need to hammer your seed words into commercial-grade titanium plates instead of writing them down on paper. Don't do that. Paper sucks. You want to literally stamp your seed into this plate of titanium. Your words are actually stamped into the metal plate with this hammer. So once your words are in, they aren't going anywhere. No risk of the plate breaking apart and your pieces falling everywhere. Titanium stamp seeds will survive nearly triple the heat produced by a house fire. They are also crush proof, waterproof, non-corrosive, and most importantly, because this is generational wealth, time proof. All things that paper is not, allowing you to hodl your Bitcoin for the long haul. I mean, here is the plate that they crushed. They put in water. They put a blowtorch to it. And as you can see, the words have survived. Stamp your seed on Stampseed. And you can use promo code SIMPLY to get 15% off anything on their store. Head over to stampseed.com today.
All right, everybody, we are back. At the time of recording, the Bitcoin price is $85,160. Block height, 892,702. Sats per dollar, 1,174. Market cap, 1.69 trillion. Bitcoin versus gold market cap, 7.18%. Percentage issued, 94.53%. Decline from all-time high, -22%. Realized monetary inflation, 0.85%. I also want to give a shout out to the live stream. We have 2,411 people watching live, 623 of you guys watching live on YouTube alone. If you guys are enjoying the show so far, smash that like button. Help us break 300 likes by the end of the show. We're already at 150 likes. Smash that like button. So today, I kind of want to continue the conversation that I was having on yesterday's show. And it seems like at least some senators are watching Simply Bitcoin, because breaking just since Senator Mike Lee calls to abolish the IRS and Federal Reserve. We've been talking about the Overton window. Take a shot. I see someone in the chat saying you guys are waiting for Nico to say Overton window. I said it. But I kept saying this. I'm like, guys, look, it's great. We have a pro Bitcoin president in the White House. That's awesome. But I think people are, you know, they're losing. The end goal should be to end the Fed. Like, let's be honest here. We've been saying that for a couple weeks now. Yes, it's great. We have a pro Bitcoin administration. Yes, the end of Operation Choke Point 2.0. Ross is free. That's absolutely awesome. That's amazing. But, you know, it'd be dope if we ended the Fed. It'd be dope if we ended the IRS. But we have to move that Overton window. And that Overton window seems to be shifting. It seems like the collective consciousness might be having similar thoughts, because we have a U.S. Senator, Senator Mike Lee. He calls to abolish the IRS and the Federal Reserve. And also, it's not only senators. This is apparently the president does as well. So President Trump wants to eliminate income tax. Here's how much extra you take home if you make $75,000 a year. We've heard Howard Lutnick talk about this as well. Their goal is to use the revenue from tariffs to replace the IRS. So essentially, instead of it being the IRS, they want to create the External Revenue Service, so the ERS. I don't know if that makes sense. But anyhow, I have a video of the great Ron Paul talking about income tax. Let's check it out, and then we'll all talk about it.
You can't have a government like this without an income tax, but we don't want a government like this. This is not the kind of government that was designed by our founders of the country. It's not what was written in the Constitution. We've only had an income tax since 1913. But if you want a welfare state, and if you want to police the world and pay for the defense of Japan and Germany, send foreign aid to the Soviet Union, you not only need the income tax, you need the Federal Reserve to print up the money when the deficit is accumulated. So we think the government should be much smaller. If government is...
So this is exactly what we were talking about yesterday. We were talking about it. We talked about 1913. We talked about how, you know, is it feasible to have a government, you know, without an income tax? And the answer is yes. But the question goes to, what is the role of government? What should be the role of government? If you want the role of government to be much larger how it is today, then yes, you do need an income tax, because you need to pay for all of that somehow. But if you believe in small government, if that's even, I'm convinced, like, even with the best intentions, it's going to be very difficult for anyone to decrease the size of government. That's my own interpretation of everything that's going on. But yeah, I mean, Lop, I don't think I've ever heard your thoughts and opinions on this specific matter. What are they, man? Like, you know, what's go- like, is the, I'll start it off with this. Is the Overton window shifting? Are more and more people waking up to the idea that perhaps the Federal Reserve wasn't a great idea? Perhaps, you know, I'm not getting in return what I am paying in taxes. Lop, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think people are realizing that they're not getting what they want from their taxes. But, you know, this is a common coordination problem with the welfare state. We're, you know, basically talking about wealth redistribution. So where is the money going? And of course, this is, I think, the bigger problem when it comes to the United States government and our budget, is that, you know, even if you look at what DOGE has been doing and, you know, cutting a lot of waste, it's being more than offset by the spending increases that Congress is looking at. So it's a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, I guess. It's like we're continuing to hemorrhage large amounts of fiscal power. And, you know, you can try to look around and say, okay, we're going to change, you know, where we get our revenue from, but I feel like it's more straightforward to try to cut what we're spending on than it is to, you know, try to find more. So a big part of that is, of course, the fact that this is Team America, World Police, and we outspend everybody else when it comes to defense. So you have to ask whether or not you're okay with the United States becoming more isolationist and what effects that might have upon the world and geopolitics and the global economy.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent answer. Opti, what's your take on this? I mean, it's crazy, man. We were talking about this yesterday, and it's crazy that, you know, a senator is saying this as well. Of course, you have the administration, but, it, you know, as Lop was pointing out, right, there are kind of, you can call it trade-offs, right? And depending on, you know, what type of society you want to live in, you know, a lot of us, I think, would want smaller government. But at the same time, you know, at the same time, you know, the era of kind of world police, you know, that has to be paid for in a sense. Right. So, Opti, what's your take on all this, man? This is an interesting discussion, bro. We're moving the Overton window. You know, let's see what happens. Opti, what's your take?
Well, first of all, I do think it's very interesting that we are seeing senators and politicians or Elon Musk, et cetera, very high profile people talk about this. For it seemed like forever it was just Ron Paul was the only one that was saying this. And now it does seem like it's become an acceptable topic of discourse where people are even bringing it up. You know, Trump's been saying it or at least alluding to it. We're seeing other politicians allude to it. So it is I'm just reminded of that Ron Paul meme where he's with like the Ninja Turtles or something. And we were all babies, and now he's I'm blanking on the old guy, you know, the rat guy. But it feels like Ron Paul has finally come onto the world stage, and people are actually taking his thoughts seriously. It seems forever that he was just, you know, relinquished to a corner of political discourse, and now people are actually bringing these ideas up and taking them very seriously. Now, to the actual question of will they eliminate the Fed? I mean, my personal bias is that, of course, you know, the Fed isn't federal and has no reserves. It's the biggest Ponzi scheme in the world right now, and it should totally be eliminated. It's a cancerous institution, as Thomas Sowell would always say. So those are my views on it. But do I think that they will willingly end the Fed? I doubt it. I think they're going to be forced to basically reel back. And on the idea of America being the world police, like, you know, I know there is geopolitical ramifications of what that would mean if we pulled back, but I am kind of I'm kind of in favor of a little more of a isolationism in the U.S. I think that would be a good thing. But of course, there's a lot of tricky, complex, nuanced conversations that have to go about this. But I'm not a fan of the military industrial complex. And as we've seen, the military industrial complex has not been turned off since World War II. But we are now getting to a stage where it is kind of imploding on itself. The interest payments of U.S. debt is getting out of control. It's literally past the military-industrial complex at this point, and it's becoming unattainable. As we've been saying, they're going to have to continue to print money. So we're getting to a point now where the federal government is being forced to actually make these decisions. And will they actually end the Fed? Like, I highly doubt it. I don't think they will turn off the machine. They will, or turn off the machine willingly. They will be forced to, or else the fiat system implodes on itself. Like, we almost saw it last week. You know, Trump tried to make a very strong move, almost blew up the bond market. And he's like, actually, you know, this was our plan all along. We're going to have to roll this stuff back. So they can try to manipulate fiat currencies, but we're going to see unintended consequences. And of course, this is why we're Bitcoiners. And we constantly tell people, like, you want to have a neutral money that no government can manipulate. This is why you should be saving Bitcoin, even if it's a small portion of your total wealth. Like, you need to have some Bitcoin right now. It's the only safe haven asset or money or commodity or whatever you want to call it, whatever framing you want to call it. It's the only safe haven at the moment, and the world just hasn't really woke up to it. It's starting to wake up to it. Someone was trolling me in the chat saying that we've been calling Bitcoin Master Splinter. Sorry, guys. Ron Paul is Master Splinter now, and you know, we have all taken up the baton for him, and it's becoming a actual viable conversation in politics now, which is, I think, beautiful. And I think as more of us younger people grow up, especially as Bitcoiners grow up and the price of Bitcoin goes up, like, this is going to be a very real conversation. This is going to happen in 2 years, 4 years, probably not. I'm thinking more like, you know, a decade or two from now, we can actually do this. But I don't think they're going to have a choice. We all know the end game here is they're going to have to print more money. So, you know, the fiat Ponzi scheme will implode on itself, but hopefully it doesn't happen as quickly as a lot of doomer Bitcoiners would like it to happen.
Absolutely. Guys, if you guys are enjoying the show, 2,600 of you guys watching live, smash that like button. Again, help us break 300 likes by the time the show ends. We're almost at 200 likes. We're going to hit the culture segment. We're going to be talking about all things Casa. So let's check it out. We will be right back.
I want to give a shout out to our partner, Hive Digital Technology. Why Hive in 2025? Unstoppable growth. As the first ever public miner, Hive's position to quadruple their global footprint, making them one of the world's fastest growing miners in 2025. And with elite operations that consistently top the industry in Bitcoin mined per exahash, Hive's now headquartered in the USA. They're lean and mean, they're green and clean, and they're rewriting the playbook on sustainable Bitcoin mining. You can catch the latest buzz at Hive Digital Tech or at HiveDigitalTech.com.
Need liquidity without having to sell your Bitcoin? For more than 6 years now, Ledin has been the trusted choice for Bitcoin-backed lending, with transparency, security, and trust at their core. I absolutely love these guys, and I personally not only have an account with them, but also a loan. And some of the key features that I love about Ledin is the fact that there are no monthly payments. You pay at the end of the term. You also have the ability to roll over the loan as well, and you can pay it back whenever you want. Essentially, what they do is that they help their clients unlock the liquidity of their BTC, allowing you to HODL while still accessing the wealth of your Bitcoin. They've been battle tested with their focus on transparency, security, and trust, allowing them to build a proven track record of client success and security, helping tens of thousands of clients harness the value of their digital assets with confidence and peace of mind. Learn more about what your BTC can do for you today. Simply Bitcoin viewers get 0.25% off their first loan by using the link in the video/podcast description. What are you waiting for? Head over to ledin.io today. All right, everybody, we are back. And of course, we have the CTO and co-founder of Casa joining us on the show, Jameson Lopp. Jameson, how are you doing today? Could you go to another page, Opti? I don't want to look at myself.
I don't know. You look so handsome here. Now you know I'm lying.
Can you go to the regular page, please? Thank you, Opti. Okay, so let's talk about all things Casa. Take control of your Bitcoin. Personally, like I said, we changed up the segments today, so you guys haven't seen the Casa ad. But what I say on the Casa ad every single day on Simply Bitcoin is I've been recommending this to my friends and family for years, obviously because I want them to have all the advantages of multi-key security. And some of the things that I absolutely love about the Casa app is that if you lose a key, it makes it incredibly easy to replace that key within the app. And also, I believe Casa holds a key themselves. So again, you know, there's a lot of, you can make mistakes and it's not as punishing as a single key setup. Or if you lose the words, or, you know, you forget the pin to your device and you lose the words. I've heard stories of that, you know, it comes to a tragic end. So, you know, Casa kind of holds you through it, you know, they walk you through this. So Jameson, I'm going to give you the microphone, you know, to our audience right now. I'm assuming the majority, we've done polls on this before. The majority of our audience, you know, has their Bitcoin in self-custody. Why should they look at an app like Casa?
I mean, it mainly comes down to how confident you are that your own setup is sufficiently robust against all of the potential dangers of loss. When you go from a trusted third party setup to a self-custody setup, you reduce a lot of the risk of theft or rug pull, but you're taking on a lot of responsibility and you're opening yourself up to a lot of new potential forms of loss, generally, you know, from making mistakes and losing keys over a long period of time and, you know, getting locked out of your own coins. So, you know, there's a ton of different options out there for people to do self-custody, many of which are really do it yourself, don't really get any support. If you want the most extreme private version of doing self-custody, then ultimately you can't get help from anyone. You have to do it all yourself. And for people who have the time and resources and knowledge to do that, then you absolutely should go that route. What we're really targeting are the people who perhaps they're not confident enough to take self-custody. They don't understand all the risks and best practices, or the people who have been in a, you know, straightforward, maybe single signature hardware setup for a long time, but that value has 10x or 100x gone through the roof. And now they are looking for something that's more robust that can tolerate having failures happen. You don't want your entire life savings to evaporate because of one thing that went wrong and resulted in catastrophe. So really what we're doing is we're fighting against the convenience of giving all your money to a trusted third party. And our primary value add, I would say, is letting people sleep better at night, knowing that if and when something goes wrong, they're not going to lose access to their coins. And so there's a variety of different mechanisms that go into play there, you know, having multiple keys, using a diversity of different software and hardware devices, having them distributed geographically, and then also offering an inheritance option where we essentially help you set up game theory so that you can share a key with a beneficiary and not give them access to your coins until after you actually get hit by a truck. So a lot of this is just us having spent so much time in the market, having seen so many catastrophes and people lose their coins in different ways, and building our product and our service such that it automatically guides you down the best path so that you can avoid a lot of the foot guns that are out there.
Totally. It looks like Puerto Rico, we lost Nico. But I have one question, or he's back.
I'm back. I apologize. Puerto Rico, and as you could tell, the power has gone out and the internet has gone out, but I'll be back home in about a week or so. And I appreciate but I did hear Jameson's breakdown, and this is exactly why I recommend it to essentially family and friends. And there's two plans that you guys offer, which is the 2 of 3 setup and then the 3 of 5. The 3 of 5 is so cool because it feels like a 2 of 3. Why do I say that? So, because one of the keys are on your phone. One of the keys are on your phone. And then, of course, you have the option to, I believe you have the option to have three. Jameson, help me out here. My mind is blanking. Okay.
Yeah, three separate hardware devices, preferably different manufacturers to eliminate potential supply chain issues.
Absolutely. And then, so the 2 of 3. You have the option to have one of the keys on your phone. One of the keys Casa holds, and then you have the option to use a hardware wallet of your choice. Of course, our sponsor, our partner, Cold Card, is compatible with the Casa app. And then the 3 of 5, it feels like a 2 of 3 because essentially you can sign with your phone, and you sign with two hardware wallets. So if you have the 2 of 3 set up with two hardware wallets, the 3 of 5 signing process feels almost identical to the 2 of 3 signing process. And I don't know if you guys did that by design or it was just happenstance, but it definitely feels really cool. And there's haptic feedbacks along the way to make you feel good. Lop.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're always trying to find the sweet spot between convenience and security. That's why we do have a mobile key, even though the mobile key is strictly less secure because it is a hot key. The nice thing about that key is that you get an automatic encrypted backup. And then we're also able to build key sharing features off of that so that you can securely share the encrypted version of that key, with a inheritance beneficiary, for example. And then we don't allow them to unlock it unless a 6-month waiting, cooling off period goes by, after which they claim that you have passed away. So there's some really interesting game theory and flexibility that you can set up when you have a multi-key solution. And also with Casa holding one of those keys offline as well, just helps us be able to facilitate spending and get you out of certain situations where things may have gone wrong. It can also just be a convenience thing. For example, if we have a client who has keys that are distributed, all over a country or sometimes even across multiple countries, and they don't want to have to travel too much, then, they can sign with their mobile key and then go get a hardware key and then request a signature from us. And, we'll have to go through the authentication process that they've set up beforehand in order to prove themselves to us so that we will sign it.
Absolutely. And then also one of the things that, one of the things that I love that you guys do is the inheritance. And I keep seeing in the chat, people keep bringing up, Elaine's savage comment, Alzheimer's is rampant. This could be a problem. Inheritance planning is the important thing. Also, if I get bonked in the head, I can't remember my name. And then someone else asked, is Jade wallet compatible? And then Opti, people are asking about the subscription. So yeah, we'll go through some of those questions and we'll talk about the subscription. By the way, guys, if you go to casa.io/simply, you get 10% off any type, either Casa Standard or Casa Premium. They're really cool. The Casa Premium is the 3 of 5. The Casa Standard is the 2 of 3. Both are excellent. I've personally used them and I've recommended them to friends and family. So let's go through this. Lop, could you break down what the inheritance process is like?
Yeah, so it will vary slightly depending upon your M of N setup. For the 2 of 3 setup, it's incredibly simple. You can onboard an inheritor in, I would say, about 10 minutes. You basically just have to invite them to your vault setup. They download the app, and then you can do this encrypted key exchange via QR codes between your apps and they're set up at that point. They have an encrypted copy of your mobile key, but they can't actually use it. Really, the only thing they can do is to hit a button in the app, which is to kick off the inheritance claims process. That starts a 6-month timer. And when that timer goes off, we start contacting you and basically saying, hey, if you're still alive, you really need to let us know. Go into the app and cancel this claim and probably kick this person out of your app so that they aren't going to get access to your key. And if you're in a 3 of 5, it's slightly more complicated because you have to do the mobile key share, but then you can also share one hardware key. And depending upon how sophisticated your inheritor is, you can have them use any of the hardware devices we support. But I would say we've also added YubiKey support last year, which is incredibly user-friendly, especially for a long-term key holder setup. Because unlike really all of the other Bitcoin-specific hardware devices out there that tend to have a somewhat limited shelf life of a few years before they die or the firmware stops working. There's a number of things that can go wrong. The YubiKey is a dead simple device. I mean, you can throw it through the washing machine and it'll come out the other end just fine. So we figure that's another interesting new sweet spot to hit for less technical people trying to find that that right trade-off between convenience and security.
Absolutely. So the next question was, is the Jade wallet compatible?
We have not added Jade support, though I'm going to be paying attention to, some of the recent security vulnerabilities that came out around some of the chipsets that I think Jade was using. I haven't seen Blockstream specifically respond to
that. I saw Adam Back respond this morning.
He said it was nonsense, but
exactly.
We'll see. This is a constantly moving space with security, right? Is that especially the Ledger team tends to be really proactive at sort of offense and trying to break all of the other hardware devices out there. And really, there is no perfect hardware device. And that's why we suggest using multiple different manufacturers' devices, because they all have strengths and weaknesses.
So one of our partners is, of course, the Cold Card. The Cold Card is compatible with the Casa app, right? The Cold Card Q and the Cold Card MK4.
Correct.
And then I have the website here. Someone was asking about the subscription. So
yeah, let's go through the subscription. So there is the Casa Standard, which is $21 a month, $250 for the year. And then the Casa Premium, it's $175 a month, and it's $2,100 a year. And then there's Private Client. If you use promo code SIMPLY, you get 10% off either the Casa Standard plan or the Casa Premium plan. Again, I highly, highly recommend this, especially if you're perhaps not technically savvy, or perhaps you have your parents or your grandparents and they're holding Bitcoin and you want them to hold spot Bitcoin. This is a great way. And Lop, forgive me if I'm describing it this way, but I'm going away. It's a great way to idiot-proof a self-custody setup. Akasa makes it incredibly easy. I mean, incredibly hard for you to lose access to your Bitcoin because there's so many redundancies, especially on the premium plan. That's how I would describe it. And that's why I've been recommending it for many, many years. Even before they were a partner, I was recommending Casa. So anyways, guys, I do want to thank Jameson Lopp. He's the CTO and co-founder of Casa for joining us on the show today. Jameson, thank you.
You bet. And you know, I think the main thing that I would mention is that, you know, this isn't just an app. This is really security consulting service. So especially at the higher tiers, what you're really paying for is having dedicated client advisors that will help you with decision-making processes and with dealing with any of the issues that come up from being a long-term holder. And the private client is actually takes it to the next level, where it's not just security for your Bitcoin, but it's security for your life. And that's where we'll help you with things like privacy, operational security, hardening all of the other aspects of your life that ultimately still also have an effect upon the security of your Bitcoin wallet.
Awesome. And guys, again, go to casa.io/simply, find out more. Go check out Jameson on X. He has a bunch of resources. You can follow him at Lopp. Jameson, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody, stay tuned. We are going to hit the news segment. We have tons to talk about. Let's check it out. We will be right back. I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Casa. Casa makes self-custody easy and secure. As a Bitcoiner, I care about holding my own private keys, but multi-sig can sometimes get tricky. Casa nails it with a multi-key security. So even if one key gets lost or stolen, your Bitcoin stays safe. And you don't give up custody, meaning no one could access your Bitcoin but you. No seed phrase anxiety, no single point of failure. I've been telling my friends and family about Casa for years. Their UX and UI on their app is by far the best in the industry. Inheritance planning is built in, and they even offer Casa for Business if you're thinking about a Bitcoin treasury. Hit up casa.io today and use promo code SIMPLY to get 10% off Casa Standard or Casa Premium. Head over to casa.io. I want to give a shout out to our partner, CoinKite. If you take your Bitcoin security seriously, you'll need the best Bitcoin hardware wallet on the market to take self-custody. That's where Cold Card comes in. The Cold Card Q is the most advanced Bitcoin signing device ever made. It's got a full keyboard, larger screen, and NFC support, making air gap signing easier than ever. It's built for power users who want the ultimate security without sacrificing usability. And if you're looking for a battle-tested, uncompromising cold storage, the Cold Card MK4 is your go-to with PSPT signing, an industrial-grade secure element, and USB-C. It's the perfect blend of security and convenience. Both devices are, of course, 100% Bitcoin only, open source, and built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. Secure your Bitcoin the right way with the Cold Card Q and the MK4. Head over to coldcard.com today and use promo code SIMPLY to get 5% off anything on the store. All right, everybody, we are back. We have so much to cover on today's news segment. First, I'm going to start it off with this clip from Jack Mahler's. Before I play you guys the clip, I want to read you guys the post from Pete Russo. He says, President Trump just asked the Supreme Court for the authority to fire Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. And here are some of the details. President Trump has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to allow him to immediately fire top officials at two independent agencies. Okay, so a lot to like uncover, a lot to unpack here. Because again, I think as a society, what we're going through is this kind of collective awakening to the reality of this broken, corrupt system, right? And I think you see that with U.S. senators saying, and the Federal Reserve and the IRS. You see that with the Trump administration openly talking about the year 1913, what happened in 1913, the IRS was established and the Federal Reserve was established, right? So, you know, what is going on here? Like, what is happening? Like, what's going on? What's happening? You know, why is everyone asking these questions? Well, it's simple. We were sold – on the idea that the income tax and the Federal Reserve would make society better as a whole, specifically the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, their whole job was to keep unemployment under control and keep inflation under control. That is the whole purpose of the Federal Reserve. Now, what I keep saying, even Ron Paul has said this, is the two worst depressions and recessions in American history have happened under the Federal Reserve. The 1929 and the 2008 financial crisis, which has completely impoverished my generation entirely, right? We are poorer than our parents. It's an undeniable fact, right? So if the system is broken, you start to ask questions about it. Do you think it's a coincidence that Bitcoin was invented in 2009 or discovered or Bitcoin started in 2008, 2009, right after the great financial crisis? Do you think it's a coincidence that in the Genesis block, it literally says Chancellor on the brink of the second bailout for banks? Do you think that's a coincidence? No, Bitcoin was a response to the broken system. Bitcoin was a response to the fact that Satoshi knew that central banking was broken and is broken. But remember, if we want to effectuate change, you have to essentially make these ideas culturally acceptable to the masses. Because when Ron Paul started talking about all of this, no one really listened to him. No one cared. No one, you know, like people would say, you know, this guy's crazy. This guy's insane. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But Ron Paul was right. Like, that's the part that no one talks about. Ron Paul was right. He was 100% right. He was right about the income tax. He was right about the central bank. And it only was until 15, 20 years later when these systems are getting to the point where, again, if you're a millennial, if you're a Gen Zer, you are not happy. You're not happy. The world has gotten wealthier. Technology has advanced, but you have gotten poor. You are poorer than your parents. You have less opportunities than your parents. The age of which home ownership starts has gotten higher. The marriage age has gotten higher. The amount of kids people are having are less. Why is all of that? What the F happened in 1971? What happened in 1971, right? So lots of questions there. So anyhow, we have to continue to move the Overton window as we have done on all the other topics. And here is Jack Mahler's talking about essentially the, you know, let's check it out.
I honestly believe over the next 12 to 36 months or so, we're going to see drastic changes in monetary policy. Listen, we need Trump to get in office and we need to understand what his plan is, but he's even hinted at having some oversight and control over the Federal Reserve. Is it beyond us that the way Trump sees himself taming inflation, controlling financial markets while allowing the S&P and assets to rise in the greater interest of the people? Maybe he wants Bessent to be the Fed chairman and lead the Treasury. Is that beyond us? Is Trump going to exercise his right to have further oversight over the Fed? Would that imply and mean that Trump is going to use some form of yield curve control to exercise absolute control at both ends of the market and make sure that assets pump and inflation is relatively tamed at the expense of those that hold the dollar? Is that what he means by weaker dollar and strengthening our exports?
So again, we are living through, you know, some people call it the fourth turning. Some people call it, you know, many things. We are in uncharted territory with the tariffs, with 1913 being thrown around left and right, with senators saying end the income tax. This is a historical administration, right? You had Democrats who left the party and joined this administration to essentially make this, you know, a historical, because people were asking for historical change. And the reason for that, and you have RFK Jr., you have Tulsi Gabbard, part of Trump's cabinet. And the reason why that is all happening, fundamentally, I think it comes down to wealth inequality. I think it comes down to the fact that people are hurting. I think it comes down to the fact that we went through, you know, multiple decade-long wars for what? Imagine if all of that money from those wars, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, were actually spent on the American people rather than being spent on death, because that's essentially what it was spent on. And I think this is what, and when you arrive in these moments in history, people want change. And where I think people get this wrong, and I think people need to wake up, is for the first time, people have the power in their hands. They don't need, you know, the collective to vote on a better leader to make sure that the direction of the country is on the right path. People can now vote with their wallet. They can vote to opt out of that said system into Bitcoin. They don't need to wait. They don't need to, you know, wait for the Trump administration to do this. They don't need to wait for, you know, Jerome Powell to do that. They don't need to wait, you know, for anything. They could literally start living a better life today, right now. If they want to, all they have to do is just opt out and choose Bitcoin. So Opti, what's your take on all this, man? I mean, historical times, I think Mahler's is right. I think Trump definitely has something up his sleeve. We know that him and Powell have been fighting, right? Apparently, I saw an interview with Bessette being interviewed, and he was like, no, I have tea with Powell, you know, every morning or something like that. Or every week I have lunch with Powell. Like, you know, and then you have Trump basically calling for, you know, Powell to lower interest rates. And again, you know, we always hear about this word democracy, like democracy this, democracy that. That's like one of the most, the word I hear all the effing time, right? But my question is like, is it really a democratic system if the person who gets to make the decisions about the money isn't democratically appointed? They're appointed by the president every 6 years, and the president doesn't have the ability to fire that person. Right? Like, that's crazy. Opti, what are your thoughts, bro?
Well, you know, democracy, the god that failed, as the book is named, I think is a good starting place for a lot of people. Look, I do believe in this thesis or theory or hypothesis that has been kind of circulating around Twitter and kind of macro groups, this idea that what we're seeing play out right now is essentially the Trump administration trying to reel in Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve. It does seem, from all things that I've seen, that is the game being played right now. And of course, like I said it earlier, you know, and the Federal Reserve is a cancerous institution. It's not federal. It has no reserves. It's literally the biggest Ponzi scheme that the world has ever seen. It is the main mechanism to fund the military industrial complex that we all have lived and been a part of. They're literally creating money out of thin air. It's literally useless papers that we spend our lives to acquire. And we see that there's a small, there's a small cabal of people that control and manipulate the variables of that money that is literally a crucial core technology of society. I saw, actually, shout out to Jesse Myers. What's his Twitter? Croesus BTC. He dropped a really good article the other day. I think it was last week on Friday or something like that. And he essentially made the case that the differentiating factor between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals or every other, you know, bipedal human-like species that's ever been on planet Earth is the fact that we were able to essentially create money, that we could think in abstract terms. And that's a fundamental building block of why humans are humans. And yet, we've found ourselves in this position where we trust, you know, a small group of people to manipulate those factors because we think that they can control this very complex thing known as the economy. It just makes absolutely no sense. Like, human action is very complicated, and I find it pretty ridiculous that we've been bamboozled for so long to believe that, you know, 12 people or a small group of really smart, high IQ people can manipulate the economy for the better of all of the people in society. It just doesn't work that way. That's not how society works. That's not how economics works. And yet we've gotten to this point where that's where the majority of people believe is the right way to move forward. Like, this is the status quo. This is the myth that we live upon in this current moment. But this is why we have Bitcoin. Now we can see that there is a money that no one can manipulate, that there aren't variables to manipulate, that is, you know, algorithmically locked at 21 million over a long course of time. We know when the monetary supply schedule of Bitcoin will play out, or roughly know when it will play out. So everything is, you know, telegraphed into the future. And therefore, we have something that is stable, a hard capped currency, a hard cap money, something that doesn't change. So therefore, we can make our measurements and our calculations of how society and economics will work out. And therefore, you find, you know, that life is a lot easier when you don't have to readjust your economic calculations based every month off what a few people want to do. And literally, we're seeing right now, like, I'm pretty sure Jay Powell just started speaking, or he's about to speak, and the markets are tanking. Like, it was pumping going into the meeting, and right now, you know, Bitcoin just hit 85k like 15 minutes ago, and now we are under 84k. It's like an 83.9. So we're seeing this play out in real time, but yet this is the status quo, where people think this is normal, that people think this is exactly how a modern society should be run, is that we should entrust a small group of people to manipulate the money supply for better outcomes. It's absolutely ridiculous. And this is why this is why the show exists in the first place. We don't have to deal with this. We just, like, stack Bitcoin, take that Bitcoin into cold storage. You know, the Bitcoin price fluctuating is not necessarily a Bitcoin issue. The volatility is a good thing. Powell is on live. Shouts out to Thomas. He just sent us $5. Yeah. So, you know, he's trying to calm down the masses here and being like, trust us, bro. We know what we're doing here. We got this under control. And yet the markets have been freaking out the last 2 weeks. And people think this is normal. It's absolutely insane. I just have, you know, a monetary unit that doesn't change. It's Bitcoin. Yes, the exchange rate to fiat currencies may fluctuate. Yes, it is volatile. But I'm always reminded of that one chart of the Weimar Republic. You know, as currencies start to hyperinflate, as we see increased uncertainty in society, these fiat prices start to, you know, oscillate and be extremely volatile. And yet, as most Bitcoiners would say, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. And it's not Bitcoin that's volatile. It's the fiat world that's volatile against Bitcoin. It is a wave crashing on a giant rock. Bitcoin is that rock. So, Nico, I see you pulled this up. I don't know if you want to play this or what.
Yeah, I mean, let's play some of it. It's crazy to me, just to kind of add to what Opti was saying, right, is that, you know, everyone is looking at what this single gentleman is going to say. His words hold weight. His words will either sink the market, it'll make the market go up. What a archaic system. You know, it reminds me of the South, like South Park had a meme on this. Elon had, you know, some comments about it. It's like, look, it's better to have a magic eight ball making decisions about the economy than the current system today, right? So yes, everyone's watching this. You know, this is like financial, you know, super sports. This is like the event to watch. You know, everyone's like talking about, you know, no cuts. Like, this is insane. This is like the very definition of a centrally planned economy and market. This is absolutely crazy. But anyways, yeah. Anyhow, guys, if you guys enjoyed today's show, you know it would be crazy.
Wait. One thing. Oh, God, Nico. There's one thing I want to say before we leave. It's about the chat, guys. Block this fake Simply Bitcoin account in the chat, posting some WhatsApp stuff. Mods, do your job. I think he has his block, so I can't see it. All right. Anyways, go.
I do want to give a shout out before we go. We are going. The Simply Bitcoin crew will be in Las Vegas for the Bitcoin 2025 conference. Embrace the Game Theory. It's the world's largest Bitcoin conference. It's going to be at the Venetian Hotel, May 27th through the 29th in Las Vegas, Nevada. The world's largest Bitcoin conference. I call it the Bitcoin NFL Super Bowl weekend. You know, all the biggest Bitcoiners are going to be there. You definitely don't want to miss this Bitcoin celebration. Again, May 27th through the 29th, Las Vegas, Nevada. Get your tickets now before the prices go up. You can use promo code SIMPLY to get 10% off. Again, promo code SIMPLY to get 10% off your tickets to Bitcoin 2025. We hope to see you guys in Vegas. The entire Simply Bitcoin crew will be there. Anyways, guys, we hope you enjoyed today's show. We hope we provided you guys value. If you guys did, make sure to smash that like button. Consider subscribing to Simply Bitcoin. Appreciate all y'all for watching and giving us the love and support. It really, really helps us keep this show going. And yeah, guys, love you all. Smash the like button, hit the subscribe button, and we'll see you tomorrow for a brand new episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. Peace out, everybody.
Today's episode was brought to you by BitcoinWell.com, a Bitcoin-only platform on a mission to enable financial independence.